This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I don't think I'm going into work tomorrow because tomorrow work is not open. It is Good Friday. I love me some Good Friday. I love me some Easter more. Yeah. Between Easter and the topic today, I wouldn't be surprised if I choke up quite a bit because, man, I love me some Easter. Anyways, all is well. Things are moving forward at work. We're closing up the month at this point, doing that kind of stuff. Ran the stuff today to harvest a bunch of records for the close of month. That all went fine. The processors are kind of settling into the new system. That all looks good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's good. We had a big move for the web store that I had built them several years ago. Had a big move that we had to do this week. That seems to have all gone fine. So, work is good. I finished up on the cover last weekend. Got pictures taken of the kids. Got the kids put on the covers. It was kind of a long road, but we wound around and made it. And the books are in process now, getting printed. And so that's all going fine. And I've been working on my taxes. The taxes are going fine. So all of that is well, and everything's good. I'm starting to kind of think about, get ideas for the next book, because it is the first book of the next octet, so it's a reset. Everything resets. I still have many of the same characters, but the whole thing resets. And the phrase from the poem, first line of the second stanza, of The Second Coming by Yeats that this book revolves around is my watch is telling me that I have a rehearsal, but I don't think I do because Paul is actually, another one of the sound men is actually running it, so I think I'm good and I don't have a rehearsal. Anyways, the line from the poem is, surely some revelation is at hand, which is, you know, that's pretty generic. I can do quite a few things with that. So this book is wide open. I can set this book pretty much anywhere in the night that I want to. I could do it. So I'm just kind of leafing through ideas in my brain because on Sunday, that starts the next sprint. So we get started. And the books will be coming in this next week. And so that will take up an evening. So I'm going to lose that evening. And so I have to make sure I can get started, get rolling, blah, 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 blah. It's interesting. At the same time, I had applied. I don't know if I mentioned this last week. I think I did. Of this Sencell Morph. My little recorder is sliding to the side here. Let's see if we can put it back. For their beta test of their overlay program, and that came in as well. It's like, oh, I'm not quite ready for this, but the way it's going to work out, it's going to be fine. I got my taxes pretty well done. I have a few things to check on. I'll have a couple of days here. I can power the thing up and play with it a little bit and see how that all goes. And so, yeah, it will be fine. It will be fun to see how this all winds out. Interestingly enough, I think I'd probably mentioned that I thought I might be losing a few beta readers after the last book. It was pretty earthy, and I knew it was. And so it looks like I have lost a couple of beta readers on that one that have been fairly long time beta readers, but that's okay. Everybody gets to make their own decisions. And some of them have, you know, written me about that as to why. And which is fine, and I wrote back, you know, reasons for that, blah, 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 blah. The sadness in some of that is that I think pretty much all of the beta readers that I have lost, and there haven't been a ton, but all of the beta readers that I have lost would really like book 8. Because we wrap up so many things. It's a big book. There's a lot of good emotional moments in it. But, you know, that's the way things go. So that's okay. That's all right. And who knows, maybe they'll get back to it at some point and pick up the books and read them. And ta-da. It will all be fine, though. I don't regret anything that I've written thus far. Because it's so interesting. Because even though at the time I wrote the stuff that I wrote in book 7, I wasn't completely aware of why I was writing it in the way I was writing it. Now that I've done book 8, I look back and go, oh yeah, that looks like I planned this all out. Which I didn't. So I was telling a friend this week, a lot of this stuff in the first 7 books, it was just like I was throwing spaghetti against the wall just to see what was going to stick. And then in book 8, when I want to start wrapping up, it's like, oh, I'll go back and refer to that, refer to that, refer to that. This is going to look like I had this all planned out. So I'm pretty happy with the first octet. And we're moving on. And now everything's new. It's all new. So good. I mentioned that this topic that I want to comment on, revisit today, may have a little trouble getting through this. I mean, I'm having a little trouble right now just thinking about the fact that I'm going to be talking about this, but man, I highly recommend that you go and you look at the original TED Talk. The TED Talk is called Revolutionary Love in the Time of Rage. And man, in Still Whispers that I wrote in the year I turned 50, I've got a chapter in there called Truth Bubbles. And the idea of the chapter, it's got 54 little chapters. It's a quick read. They're just little 2 to 4 page chapters that are just a thought. And the idea behind Still Whispers is that they're just little meditations, little things to think about. And hopefully, as people think about them, they can quiet the atmosphere of their life. And as they quiet the atmosphere of their life, then that will more enable them. Yeah, someone needs a muffler. That's what that is. That will more enable them to actually hear the voice of God within. And if they begin to hear the voice of God within, speaking to them, loving them, accepting them, helping them, they will move closer and closer into an abundant life. I mean, it's just what Jesus said. It was what I was talking about last week. Abundance. So that Still Whispers, there is a chapter in there called Truth Bubbles. And the idea is that God is speaking to people all over the world. That His Holy Spirit is interceding with people. It's drawing people. He's whispering, trying to get people to choose a path to life and not choose the path of destruction. And if you just look around, you can see, oh yeah, that's Jesus there. One of my favorite examples of this is in that chapter, I quote from a lot of different things, but I say in that chapter that I did my best. I went and looked through the Quran, and I was trying to find something that I could quote from the Quran where you could say, yeah, there's Jesus. There he is. And I looked through all the famous quotes from the Quran, and I couldn't find anything. But There is a branch of Islam, Sufi, the Sufi, who practice meditation, who practice quietness, and there is a poet, and I can't remember his name, but he wrote this poem that I'm not going to get exactly right, but I will get it close enough. And see if I can get through this. The name of the poem is "The God Who Only Knows Four Words." That's close to it. The God Who Only Knows Four Words. And the poem goes something like this. Every child knows the God who only knows four words. Oh, every child knows God. Not the God of do's, not the God of don'ts, not the God of this and that, but the God who only knows four words, and he repeats them constantly, saying, "Come, dance with me. Come, dance." And, you know, when I hear that, I go, yeah, that's Jesus. That guy knows my Jesus. And when I listen to this TED Talk, Revolutionary Love, in the Time of Rage, there's just so many places in this TED Talk where as I was listening to it, I just thought, yeah, there he is. First of all, I love the religious heritage that the woman came from. She's Indian, and her heritage, I always heard it pronounced Sikh. She says it's Sikh. S-I-K-H. And I don't know if you spent any time looking into what the Sikh believe, but the Sikh have this idea of, let me see if I can find, because I want to use her terminology. The Sikh have this idea to walk in the path of the warrior saint. That they exist to help and to protect and to give their lives for those around them. And the woman, when she was giving this talk, was pulling from that experience and what she learned there and what she learned in her life as a mother and her experiences of being a mother. And, you know, it really is good. It's good. She talks about the three lessons she learned about revolutionary love. And it's a good talk. She talked about, first of all, when she was birthing a child, and the fact that there comes a moment on the birthing table that feels like dying. And she said her husband was assisting her. Her mom was there with her. And she said as the baby's head was coming and she was moving into transition, she said her mom was already... Yeah, see, I knew this was... I knew this was going to happen. She said her mom was already in her ear speaking the prayer of her grandfather. I'm not even going to try it in the original language. Basically, the prayer is this. Man alive, the hot wind, here it is. The hot winds cannot touch you. You are brave. And she said, I looked up in that moment and I saw not only my mom, but I saw the line of women behind her who had gone through this, who had pushed through the fire and brought new life into the world. I mean, it's a great talk. Just a second, I'm not straight. So it's really good. And she was talking about that lesson that she had that learned that sometimes when you feel like you're dying, you know, you just have to push through. And as part of that, then she started talking about her background and upbringing and how that revolutionary love is the choice to enter into labor for others. She said that her first encounter with hate was really on the schoolyard. She said she was a little girl growing up in California, where her family had lived and farmed for a century. And she said she was told that she would go to hell because she wasn't a Christian. You know, there are many things to indict us in the Christian church. And there are many reasons why people would not necessarily be attracted to Christ because of the things we do. And one of the things that we do is when we tell people that they're going to go to hell. Because that's not our place. Because we have no idea what God is going to do in their lives. We have no idea what God is going to show them or draw them. We don't have any idea of any of that kind of stuff. And telling people that they're going to go to hell is just a bad idea. And I needed to say that because I needed to get a little upset so that it would be easier for me to get through this. Okay, so there you go. So anyways, she says, when I was told that I would go to hell because I was not a Christian, called a black dog because I was not a white, I ran to my grandfather's arms, Papa G, and he dried my tears and he gave me the words of Guru Nanak, the founder of the Sikh faith. Quote, "I see no stranger," said Nanak. "I see no enemy." She said, my grandfather taught me that I could choose to see all the faces I meet and wonder about them. And if I wonder about them, then I will listen to their stories even when it's hard. I will refuse to hate them even when they hate me. This is Jesus. That's not what she said, but this is Jesus. I will vow to protect them even when they are in the harm's way, because that's what it means to be a Sikh, S-I-K-H, to walk in the path of the warrior saint. She goes on to share a story about one of the early women warriors in the Sikh faith. And the Sikh, they believe in strong women. I love the Sikh. And she basically encouraged 40 soldiers, this first female warrior, she encouraged 40 soldiers who had abandoned their post during a great battle to get back into the battle. She told them, "You will not abandon the fight. You will return to the fire, and I will lead you." And she said her grandfather told her this story, and then in response to her being criticized on the schoolyard and told she was going to go to hell, in response to her running away from that situation, her father told her, "Don't abandon your post, my dear." She said, "Because my grandfather saw me as a warrior." So, you know, it's really good. The second story that she talked about was a family friend that they called Uncle, and he was actually the first person killed in a hate crime after September 11th. He was just standing in front of his gas station in Arizona, but there was a man who mistook him for someone who is Arabic, which he wasn't, and he killed him. And she said, I went to speak to his widow, and she said, I wept with her, and I asked her, "What would you like to tell the people of America?" She said, "I was expecting blame, but she looked at me and said, 'Tell them thank you. 3,000 Americans came to my husband's memorial. They did not know me, but they wept with me. Tell them thank you.'" Okay, see, that's Jesus too. To be able, in that moment when so much hurt has been manifested on you, to not try to hurt back, to not try to lash out, but to see the good that has come. She said that 15 years after this man was killed, she said, I went to the gas station where she was killed and I set down a candle on the spot where he bled to death. And she said, my brother, or his brother, Rana, turned to me and said, nothing has changed. And she said, I ask, who have we not yet tried to love? She said, we decided to call the murderer in prison. She says, I hear the voice of Frank Roque, the man who once said, I'm going to go out and shoot some towel heads. We should shoot their children, too. And she said, the emotional impulse in me says, I can't. But she said, it becomes an act of will to ponder why, I ask, why did you agree to speak with us? Because she arranged a meeting with him. And he said, I'm sorry for what has happened, but I'm also sorry for all the people that was killed. He fails to take responsibility. I become angry to protect Rana, but Rana is still wondering about Frank, listening and responding. Frank, he says, this is the first time I hear you saying that you feel sorry. And Frank says, yes, I'm sorry for what I did to your brother. One day when I go to heaven to be judged by God, I will ask to see your brother and I will hug him and I will ask for forgiveness. And Rana says, we already forgive you. Forgiveness is not forgetting. Forgiveness is freedom from hate. She said, this was my second lesson in revolutionary love. We love our opponents when we tend the wound in them. Tending to the wound is not healing them, only they can do that. Just tending to it allows us to see our opponents, the terrorist, the fanatic, the demigod. They've been radicalized by cultures and policies that we together can change. And she goes on to talk about love and motherhood, and I'll let you listen to it for yourself because this is long and I need to end. But to recap, she says these three forms of revolutionary love. One, in order to love others and see no stranger, to learn to train our eyes to look upon strangers on the street and on the subway and say in our minds, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, I've related before how amazing it is when you greet people respectively. And their whole countenance changes as you meet them on the street. And that's really all a part of that. It's looking beyond just their outer circumstances and seeing that there are human beings there. That's the first thing, to love others and see no strangers, to wonder about them. The second one is in order to love our opponents, tend the wounds. Can we see the wound in the ones who hurt you? And if this question sends panic through your body, then your most revolutionary act is to wonder, listen, and respond to your own needs. Number three, in order to love ourselves, breathe and push. When we are pushing into the fires in our bodies or the fires in our world, we need to be breathing in order to be pushing together. Revolutionary love requires us to breathe and push through the fire with a warrior's heart and a saint's eyes so that one day you will see my son as your own and protect him when I am not there. You will tend to the wounds and the ones who will want to hurt him. You will teach him how to love himself because you love yourself. You will whisper in his ear as I whisper in yours. You are brave. It's good stuff. That's good stuff. Highly recommended. Highly recommended. Revolutionary Love in a Time of Rage. It's on YouTube. TED Talk. Highly recommended. And we would do well to hear that Jesus is speaking to many around the world. And he will get as much of his message through to as many people as he can. This is Phil Ferrand. And I have made it home.